Geert, I was thinking, we have this model around engineering culture with these 8 pillars, software delivery, smooth delivery, platforms, all these things that we need to do to build a great software company. But I was thinking, if you are a startup and you don't have a lot of money and funding, what do you do?
Yeah, you want to get out of the gates fast, right? You want to go to market fast and see if your product works. So where do you focus, or from all the people pillars, the process, or just the technology itself? I have an idea. Let's invite a guest who works at the startup, who founded the startup, and ask them how he did it.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, let's go.
The Lead Podcast. A podcast for leaders in engineering, architecture, and development.
So today we have Harald. He is the co-founder and CTO of Endonite. Welcome, Harald.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here. So can you tell us a bit about the story of how you founded the company and what were the first things that you wanted to focus on to get your company up and running?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was super lucky, I feel like, because I always had a passion for the climate and for renewable energy. And I kind of wanted to prove that you don't have to do like a hardware startup if you want to do something about making a more renewable future. You can actually do something software related. So I found some like-minded people, and we decided to start Endonite. And our founding thesis was that one of our co-founders had been working in the energy sector, and he'd been doing a lot of automation. And he saw that there was a big potential in making a lot of the processes faster and smoother so that you can build faster. Because at the end of the day, it's a race to get the best projects. So that's where we started this company. So we started 2.5 years ago. We've been working in the renewable sector for a long time. But about half a year ago, we had a big epiphany. And the big understanding that we came to is that the tools to do automation, especially within maps to find like the best suitable sites for renewable energy, they also apply for the best building projects. And they apply for finding your next apartment if you're moving into a new city. And a lot of these processes can be hard and manual and often optimized for engineers. But we wanted to empower just regular people to work with maps and map data more efficiently. And that's what we're doing today. So today we're serving renewable energy customers, but we're also serving consumers that just want to, you know, find the most optimal apartment if you want to bike to work or things like this. So that's what I get to wake up and work on every single day. And, you know, that's what gets me excited.
Yeah. So if you look at your company when you started, you found some fellow liked people to start a company. But then you didn't have any code, you didn't have any products yet, you didn't have you didn't have anything, right? So how do you, or what kind of things do you focus first? Because I guess you have a limited amount of time and money to spend your ideas on, right? So what are the first things to focus on?
Yeah, very good question. I think you have to be lean in terms of process orientation. So you need to limit the amount of processes you have to a minimum. Of course, there are some processes you definitely need, like you need, I think you need code reviews. You can't get around that. You need to do some testing. I don't think you get around that too much, but you need to cut down a lot of the stuff that you would need at the bigger corporation, especially the stuff that's meant to put everybody in sync. So you need to make sure that everybody is in sync at the same time. And especially when you're our size, when you're, you know, like six people, and I think up to like around 12 people, you can do it this way. So what we have done is make everybody very product oriented. Everybody needs to understand the customers and talk to customers and get oriented about the customer meetings. And in this way, we make sure that we don't build stuff that we don't need. So we try to keep very, very focused on bringing customer value with every release and keep the releases coming often.
And how
and I think that's one of the key things.
So that triggers me because you are a software company. So I can imagine there's a lot of real engineering, technical people working in your company, and you say we make everybody product focused. Mm-hmm. So how did you manage to do that? Because I can imagine technical people are not necessarily customer focused. They want to code.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I think what we're doing is we're making everybody that works there super engaged about maps. So we have challenges within the company every week about creating the coolest map. And it's become like a bit of a pride point to make the biggest map or the best map. But to do it, you need to master our tool. You can't make it in any other tool. That's the one condition you have for making the best map. So we're making everybody use the product every day. We're sharing the customer feedback in very public channels, making people respond to it. If a person gets assigned a certain task, they will very often also try to do part of the design. And then they will publish the feature on our internal Teams channel. And everybody can comment what they think about, from a customer perspective, about the feature and how it should be formed. Then it keeps the discussion very much as a business level, which is why I think we ship very few things that aren't customer-centric.
I love that idea, because what I see in a lot of companies is that there's a lot of developers just working. They see their backlog. Oh, I need to create this feature. And then they start building it with no idea of what the impact will be in the end product or to the end customers. And I love that you focus really on that part. And that also enables a lot of ownership, I think, for the team that's building the application. Does this also make it easier to decide on, should we add some new features or should we focus more on security, performance, those kind of things? Or how do you work with those kind of decisions?
It's very difficult. It's very difficult because I think there's at the startup, there's so many things that are important. As you mentioned, there's security, there's performance, there's all these things. And prioritization, I think it's a continuous challenge, and it's just something you have to get really good at. I think working at a startup is very much like a 90-10 type of game. You need to understand how I'm going to get 90% of the value of security in 10% of the time, and just do prioritization around that. Me, myself, I like to make things that, works well. And one of the challenges I've had myself is that I want to optimize things because I'm an engineer, and I just have to let it go sometimes. And to me, that's also a beautiful challenge, to be able to just let go and realize when it's good enough.
So what size is your company now, Harold? And
we are six people. We're just in the end of raising funding. So after that, we will scale up the team quite a bit, but right now we're six people full time. Five of us are programming. I think it's a very good mix, because the only person that doesn't program is our CEO. He's also a technical guy, also an engineer, but he does most of the business stuff. But it's very good because it means that everybody is very oriented around the same goals and engage in most of the same processes.
Yeah. Because I was wondering, so now you're six, seven, you get funding, so you will scale. So what do you think the biggest challenge will be when scaling up to, let's say, maybe 30, 40 people, if that is the ambition?
Let's start with 20. Let's start with four times as the biggest as you are now.
I think above the 12 is where I think it will be difficult, because that's when you need to have middle managers. You need to embrace all of the... You can't just have 11 developers working on a problem anymore. You need to have some more structure to it. I don't know. I think we'll have to see when we get there. But I think after we get to 11 people, I think we'll wait quite some time to scale more, just because if we need to establish middle managers, we might as well just embrace it fully. So I think right now the goal is just to get people here that are kind of, maybe it sounds a bit weird to say it, but kind of like Navy SEALs type developers, just really good at what they do. Would rather build like a super good small team and then think about the scale of the team later.
Yeah, of course. These Navy SEALs are, of course, easy to fit in, because they know the drill, they know how it works. They probably also like the whole concept of product thinking and focusing on the product itself, because they want to have a lot of autonomy. How do you see? Well, you can't always only hire these Navy SEALs, right? Because they also come with a certain price. More experience, more knowledge does cost a lot more. Do you also see some room to, like, hire juniors and then let them grow within your company?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, we do have we definitely do think that. But I think there needs to be a certain balance where the junior people can rise fast. And I think they can only do that if they're around senior people most of the time. So what we would like to do is to, you know, I think as a startup, you kind of want to give people a challenge that's a bit bigger than they think themselves they can handle, because often they manage to push through. Like, they realize that the potential is bigger than they think themselves. And I think that's when developers are truly empowered. And it's not about, you know, giving them more work or like overworking them. It's a lot more about just giving them a bigger challenge that they themselves think they can handle, and just, you know, let them swim. And I think the most beautiful thing is when you see somebody that, you know, they're not sure they're up to the challenge, and then they deliver. And then, you know, the task after that, they just do better and better and better. Yeah. And, you know, when that happens, that's when I get, you know, the warm, fuzzy feeling inside, like we're doing the right thing. And yeah, that's when I think it's super cool to be a leader.
Yeah, I love that feeling when, you know, when you think, you know, they can swim, but they don't know it themselves that well. And then you just throw them in the deep end, of course, keeping an eye on them. And then you see them floating and actually swimming. That's a great feeling of seeing people actually grow themselves.
100%.
I was also triggered by the word really empower them or enable them. So are there things that you are actively doing to really truly empower your people?
I think one of the key things is that we give a lot of responsibility and a lot of trust. I think trust is very, very key in a startup and in any organization. Personally, I kind of think that a lack of trust will be very costly, because you have to have all these processes to review things. You have to see if you have a mandate to do certain processes. Here it's kind of like, okay, you've been there for a couple of weeks. Sure, you can push the production, but if it fails, you will be the one responsible for fixing it. And that's kind of our mantra. And, you know, sometimes you end up with stuff failing, but I think that's part of the process. We're enabling people and we're, you know, making them responsible at the big level. And most of the time they just take it. And they like it so much, because they feel like they can do anything here. They're only limited by their own imagination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I truly feel that's what DevOps was always meant to be, right? You build it, you run it, you own it. So you actually take ownership of the stuff you build. Maybe I don't fully agree on the personal level. I think as a team, you should own it. It's not always the people who made the error that are to blame, right? There was also probably some reviews, etc., that could spot it. So maybe it would also be good, like, okay, as a team, we focus on getting things fixed. How do you do those kind of things? Because you run a SaaS product that's running 24/7. What happens when stuff goes wrong on Saturday night?
Then I have to run home from wherever I am and fix it. That's kind of how it is.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how it works. And it's kind of the charm. Just a couple of weeks ago, me and my co-founder Frederick, we were at the anniversary of our school graduation, and suddenly we had an error in production, and it was because of some stupid stuff. It was like the course policy has been updated, and there was spaces on the side of the URL, so like it didn't match properly, but it looked totally fine. And then you just have to take a taxi home and fix it. And that's kind of how it is. And personally, I see the charm in it so much of the time, because you're sitting in some hotel room just trying on their computer, trying to update production so it doesn't break for all the customers. And you know, at the end of the day, that's the stuff I remember. So I just embrace it.
I'm also curious on, and that is more maybe the what we say then, appropriate continuity. So when things break, of course, you have to fix it. But what have you set up to actually detect or to find those things? Is that a phone call from the customer, or did you actually do other stuff?
Mostly automated testing and health checks on every API and all that. It's, again, I feel like it's kind of the 90-10 mentality. How can you, you know, get, you know, detect most of the faults in the least possible time? And for us, that's just been, you know, health check and continuous testing. Which is, you know, pretty simple to set up. So It's got us, you know, to where we are this far.
Yeah. So are you running in the cloud, or how do you run the application?
Yeah, we're running on AWS mostly. Actually, one of the things I find kind of interesting about our case is that scaling becomes hard surprisingly fast, because when you're working with the geographical data, you need to be able to stream it quickly because the data sizes can be quite big. And, you know, there's a reason why most of the time it's on-prem. It's just because it's hard to solve it in the cloud. So a lot of the engineering work that has been truly like engineering in Matter has been making sure that we can stream data fast, making sure that we can still update it fast, making sure that it just feels like you're using some on-prem, good machine.
Yeah.
And with both with cloud, it comes the possibility to scale, but also cost is quite directly connected to that. How do you give the freedom to your team there as well? Because they can make the decisions on designing a certain feature, but that will also incline certain costs maybe in your cloud infrastructure. Does your team have the freedom there as well, or do you discuss this, or how does that work?
Right now, they do have that freedom, but it's something we constantly monitor, and I just try to teach people most about the cost they should be careful about and what they can do. And it's mostly like, it's okay if somebody does something that's a bit more costly, I'll just tell them why we should do a different way, and they'll go fix it. And at the end of the day, that's how they learn, and that's, you know, how you empower them. So yeah.
But in the end, when you build new features, you also want to have some return on investment, right? So some features might be very costly either to build or to run, and they might not deliver the same value to other. So how do you decide on these kind of things, more the business side of things on features? Because you said people can just come up with new, these challenges of coming up with new features and new maps and those kind of things. How do you in the end try to focus on the things that have the biggest return on investment?
Yeah. We do that quite simply. We just have we decided on two axes. One is effort, and, you know, cost is also implied. And the other is business value, or like perceived business value. So I think it's great because of a couple of reasons. It's very simple. So it's very, everybody gets it intuitively. But also there's something more behind it. And sometimes you don't feel like you can rank it on customer value. And that most likely means that you need more insight. You need to talk to more customers. You need to test it more, you know, test the prototype or test the design or something like that. And same on the effort side. If you can't like place it on the effort side, that most likely means that there are more uncertainty than what we'd like in our engineering practice. And that's something we have to review and take a close look at. So I think if we're unable to place the dot confidently, that just gives us, you know, so much insight to what we can improve to be more efficient and faster.
And do you also like measure certain things on the business side, like which features are being used most, or is that something that will come later on?
We do some, but not very much. It's mostly like we check mostly, you know, which APIs were called when and at what rate, and, you know, from which regions, and mostly like higher level stuff, but it's certainly something we're looking at. It's kind of also a thing where we just need to make sure that we're compliant with everything that we do. And it's kind of a core thing for us because, you know, we're dealing with secure data, and for us, trust is not only important internally, it's also important externally to our customers. Mostly because a lot of our customers have, you know, super important data. So, and they're sharing data that's very valuable with us. And, you know, we're super grateful for that, and we don't take it for granted. So security, GDPR on every single level is something that we care a lot about.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the shifting a little bit more to the people side. So I can imagine that in a small organization, it's quite easy to share knowledge with each other on different topics. But is there also something structural that you organize already, also set up for the growth that you are going to do? Like how to actually keep that knowledge that you have up to date?
Ooh, that's a very good question, I think. Very good question. Personally, I think a lot of it honestly has to do with architecture, because I think it has to be readable, it has to be understandable, it has to be separable. And I think also for me, I think good architecture enables parallel work to a higher degree. It's possible to work on their separate problem. And I think also when you have separated into services, not necessarily microservices, as in 200 separate services, like six, seven, eight good ones, then retaining the knowledge of a specific service becomes a lot easier. Yeah. So that's kind of how I think about it. And I think, you know, to me, that's also one of the things I love about being, you know, engineering leader, is being able to take a look at our technology and be like, does this technology actually, or does the way we're building our product enable us to organize efficiently? Yeah. And those questions, I just love them. That's, you know, they're super exciting to me.
Yeah, and I think that's a good approach around everything regarding your product directly. But you were also explaining like GDPR and those kind of things are also important. And I can understand, even if you have these Navy SEAL developers, that those kind of things might not be their be a top of mind for everyone, right? So they might also be kind of all kinds of rules and regulations that people need to take into account when working on these kinds of software. Do you have anything in place for that that's not directly, well, viewable in the code, but some practices, etc., that you want to share with your colleagues? That, and how do you do that?
I think mostly it's cultural. And again, I think that's, we try to have a culture of, you know, trust, transparency, those type of things. Just because I think having a culture where it's very easy to understand the action that you're supposed to take, that's when you get that effortlessly. And I think that's why we're trying to be very deliberate about how we do our culture and which things are important to us, just because that's when you don't end up having those problems. So for now, it hasn't been a problem. Maybe, you know, it might show up, but for now, it's not been a concern.
So maybe slightly moving towards wrapping up. I'm very curious. I can imagine in the startup, you have been through a lot. There's always something going on, probably. So what is the thing that you are most proud of in the last few months that you have achieved with your team?
Okay, that's a very good question. Personally, I think it's the fact that we managed to move efficiently from serving just renewable energy customers to serving a broader market, because we show that we have the pace where we continuously deliver. And if to the customer, it sometimes feel like every single time they log on, there's a new feature there that serves a need. Or if they tell us about the need, we fix it within a couple of weeks. So, and I think the side effect of having high pace is that the end customers will be more forgiving, because they know that if there's a bug or there's an error, it's not permanent. It will be fixed. Whereas if you use some type of software and you feel like you've seen a bug there for 3-4 weeks, you might be inclined to switch it around. And this is something I saw from another startup I like a lot called Readwise. They send out bi-weekly or every month, they send out a newsletter about like the new features and the new bugs. And it's so long, I never have time to read it in the morning, because there's so much stuff they do. And that's kind of how we try to operate as well. Just, you know, keep the pace high and the customers will be more forgiving about, you know, the stuff that's missing.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, to wrap it up, do you have any sources of inspiration that you use, like a book that you read or communities that you visit or things that other people who work in startups or not even work in startups but bigger companies that want to use some of these principles that you use that you can inspire them with?
Yes, absolutely. I think what people should learn from a startup is definitely the 90-10 type way of doing things, because in most aspects of our life, there is a 90-10, whether it comes to reading or eating or working out or friendships or whatever. Usually trying to figure out, or that's personally what I've done. How can I read every single day? Instead of doing like 3-hour book session, I just try to read half an hour every morning. And I try to do like a quick half an hour workout. I can do it every single day. Same with eating. I don't try to eat perfectly and do like, you know, count every single calorie, do stuff like that. But I just, you know, try to eat healthy and optimize around it. So I think embracing the 90-10 for most aspects of your life, I think that's when you can both give yourself slack and still, you know, go immensely far.
Yeah, that sounds like a really valuable lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being on our podcast. And thanks, everyone, for listening or watching the podcast. Yeah, hopefully we'll see you again maybe in the future. We have some went through some growth and you have new stories to tell us. Then we can have you back as a guest. And for our viewers or our listeners, hope to see you again at the next episode.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye.